south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You heard me in a recent show talk about Puerto Rico and how the power got knocked out so severely. It's been predicted that it's going to take over 6 months to get it all up again. In the meantime, millions of Puerto Ricans living up in the States are dead worried about their homeland. Hey, you'd be too. A lot of people don't know this, but Puerto Rico being an American protectorate or territory, if you're born in Puerto Rico, you automatically get a U.S. passport. So Puerto Ricans are all U.S. citizens too. And what that means is there really are no illegal Puerto Ricans in the U.S. They're all there legally. So don't get in a huff when you're reading about all the millions of illegal aliens in the States, thinking that some of them are Puerto Ricans, because they're not. Anyway, since the hurricane, millions of dollars and tons of aid have been flown into Puerto Rico, which is good, but you longtime listeners have heard me say many, many times, never donate to an aid organization, unless you're doing it just for the momentary feel-good effect. Because there's a great probability that the money or goods you send will never get to where you think it's going. Well, that's not 100% accurate. 1, 2, 5, or even 10% of what you give might get there, but all the rest is going to be siphoned off by scumbag politicians and executive do-gooders. You know what executive do-gooders are, don't you? The top-level guys in a so-called, quote, charitable organization, the ones that fly first class or even in their own Learjets, attending, quote, poverty conferences and conventions all over the world. Most poverty conferences, by the way, being at first-class hotels and island resort retreats. Isn't that funny? By the way, even the most impoverished so-called fourth-world countries like Haiti have first-class resort, hotel, and conference districts. So don't think when these charity executives fly into the Congo, Bangladesh, or Haiti, they're doing any kind of hardship duty. Yet still I get emails from people who donate to those NGOs saying, no, Johnny, you're wrong. You're just being a hardened cynic. Well, that may be, but wasn't it Oscar Wilde who said, a cynic, or was it pessimist, was the one-eyed guy in the room who'd examined all the facts. Which brings us to this recent email. Starts, hi, Johnny. Hope you're doing well. Now that summer's over up here in Canada, I have time to go back and listen to your shows in the archives. I'm writing you to ask if you've seen this item, and then he has a link for me, a YouTube link, concerning a big problem. Intentional misuse and holding back of foreign aid distribution to the people of Puerto Rico after the hurricane. Then he says, this sort of thing seems to be commonplace in Latin America amongst politicians and official scumbags. But they did, you know, learn from the best, those first worlder professional strain of political scumbags. I'm sure he's referring to the Clintons. You know, the Clinton Foundation, liars and looters on an international scale? Who else? Anyway, then he says, I recall you mentioning first world donations of fertilizer to Latin governments, repackaged and withheld until around election time. So then Chris, the email writer, leaves me with this YouTube link. Now, this is a very short clip, only about 5 minutes or so. A radio station interview with a female Puerto Rican cop on the beat, a few days after the hurricane destroyed the place. And in this interview, she's frantic. She's weeping and crying and telling it exactly like it is. Now, if any of you listeners want this link, just shoot me an email at theexpatfiles@gmail.com and I'll send it to you. But right now, I'm going to read part of the transcript for you. To dispel, once and for all, the notion that your aid being sent to victims of floods, earthquakes, hurricanes, whatever, it's not being used or distributed the way you think it should be. In fact, it's being heavily politicized. So what's that mean? Well, listen and find out. The title of this YouTube is, A Puerto Rican Cop Tells the Truth About Hurricane Maria's Foreign Aid. Now, the whole thing's in Spanish, so I'll read the translation. First, she starts by saying, I can't give you my real name because I'm a cop working for the Puerto Rican Police Department. Then she says, I need to pass this information out because all the aid and supplies that's being brought in from the U.S. are not being distributed properly. They are not allowing Puerto Rican families to receive these donations. Then the interviewer says, what part of Puerto Rico are you calling from exactly? She says, I'm right now in Guaynabo, Then the interviewer says, "What information do you have for us? What are you seeing now?" Remember, she's crying, even sobbing, while talking to the interviewer. Then she says, "The mayor, Carmen Yulin, is not allowing anyone to distribute what we need. What us Puerto Ricans need is that the U.S. Armed Forces or somebody come in and distribute this aid." Then she says, "They have to come in and stop the governor, Rosella, and the mayor, Yulin, from continuing with what they're doing." She says, "Like Cuban communism on our own island." And then she continues to cry. In fact, she's crying so much you can barely make out what she's saying. Then she says, "People are helping us. They're trying to help us, but the island's not accepting it. You see, you just can't donate. Aid donors actually have to wait and apply for government licenses to distribute." Then she says, "Let me tell you something. Us Puerto Ricans are dying of hunger." Then she says, "It's not because people aren't trying to help. It's our bureaucracy. Everything has to have a protocol. The lines are huge and outstretched, and we can only give one box of water per person." Then she continues to cry. She says, "Ask the medics here. People are dying, and the hospitals are in crisis." Then she says, "I'm truly embarrassed as a Puerto Rican working for Puerto Rico's police force, and we can't do anything." Now get this, she says there are thousands of food donations, thousands of boxes. And when people ask, we can't give any of it away because Carmen Yulin, the mayor, says we can't take anything out of storage. They won't let us. It's turned into kind of a soap opera. It's all a publicity show. The politicians need to have cameras around them when they're distributing stuff. And then she says, and you've heard me say this before, she says, because you know, they need a show because they're looking for votes for the upcoming election. Then she says the governor won't move, he won't do a thing unless there's a camera out there watching him. And Carmen Yulin, the mayor, won't move unless there's a camera on her. Then she says, this is what it's like after the hurricane. This is how we are living now in Puerto Rico. In the meantime, famous artists and musicians and others around the world are giving money. And the people of Florida are sending all kinds of stuff. She says, I don't know how many more thousands are helping us because we still have very little communication with the outside. Then she says, and this is the point I make all the time. She says, the people that are sending this stuff, they have to come in themselves and distribute it. They have to come and help Puerto Rico and distribute it, or it's just wasted. Then the radio station interviewer cuts in. By the way, this was being broadcast on a Spanish radio station, 98.7. Then the interviewer says, wow, we have our hearts broken just listening to you describe this situation. It's just heartbreaking when we know so many people are trying to help. Then now you're telling us what it's really like. Okay, it's me, Johnny. Again, let me remind you, this is an interview that's 100% in Spanish, and you're getting the translation. And because she's frantic and sobbing, a lot of it's not coming through. Then the lady police officer says this about the terrible state of the bureaucratic mess in Puerto Rico. She says, I've been here for an hour and a half, just trying to download an application, a cell phone app, that's been given to us cops. Problem is, the emergency phones they gave to us have built-in security measures that we can't address, even though we're police officers. So we've been given special phone apps, but we can't use them. Then she says, get this. Did you know that Cuba and Venezuela offered to send help and supplies, but our government rejected their offers just because their countries were not all that friendly with? She says, me and the other cops, we don't get it. Look, for God's sakes, we'll take help from anyone who wants to send it. Yet it's our government deciding who gets to send the aid. Tell me, she says, how is that possible? We need help. And she starts sobbing again. Then she says, get this, and she's a cop. No wonder she doesn't want to give out her name. She says, we want the U.S. to come in, bring in the strongest forces they have, come in and take our governor out. He's not doing anything for us. He's just going around in circles. Meanwhile, everyone in the foreign media is saying, oh, wow, how nice. Look at the governor of Puerto Rico. He's getting himself dirty going into the mud. He's getting his feet wet in the water, mingling with the unfortunate masses. All for show, she says. Where's our help? She says, stop this media show. The governor is just doing a show. Where is our food? Then she says, I'm a cop. There's food all right, and we know it. It's being kept in storage. So what's it doing there? Why are the people in charge not giving it out? Worse yet, she says, the government is telling other donors not to bring any more supplies in because the harbors are already full of ships. I tell you, if the U.S. government doesn't get involved, this will finish us. Then she says, this disaster will end up worse than Cuba, Africa, even worse than Haiti. We're living in a time here in Puerto Rico that you never want to see yourself. People are desperate. There's no gas. And the people are actually killing over food. Then she says, no, I can tell you as a cop that people are not robbing each other for things. They're robbing each other for food. I myself am a cop. I don't know what to give my own kids. I don't even have any more food myself, just water and crackers. Then the radio interviewer pops in and he says, you know, it's a good thing that it was you, a cop, who is explaining all this to us so that people don't think we're making all this up. Then he says, this is very serious. It should have nothing to do with politics. So there we have it, boots on the ground from a cop in Puerto Rico a couple of days after the hurricane. All right, Chris, thanks for that clip. Does that blow your mind? Well, it doesn't blow mine. It's typical. Again, it's what the malignant mainstream media just won't tell us. Meanwhile, if you happen to watch any Latin-based television down here, and if you watch any of the hundreds of Spanish-language television stations up in the States, you'll see any number of organizations begging for money. By the way, you don't watch Spanish-language TV for pleasure. You watch it to learn your Spanish. By the way, expat Eddie says every hour of Latin TV lowers your IQ by 2 points, so be careful, watch out, or you'll end up like Bush Jr. But I digress. Anyway, you'll find that every hour on the hour, even more frequently, you'll see public service announcements, NGOs, and stations themselves pleading for money to send to Puerto Rico and Mexico City in the wake of that big earthquake. And I say, just like that female sobbing cop says, don't do it. If you're going to give something, come down and hand it out yourself. So now you know what happens from firsthand reports when disaster aid floods into a country. By the way, do you belong to a do-gooder group or do you know anybody who does? Well, the problem is, you see, the foot soldiers of those organizations, the people who actually get in there with the real people, their heart's in the right place. However, it's always the executive staff, the board of directors of the Millionaire Do-Gooders Club that are raking in the dough. Nice work if you can get it, huh? But how can those guys sleep at night? Which brings me back to one of expat Eddie's famous lines. He always says, there may not be a God, but there certainly is a devil. Don't think I don't know that it feels good to do good deeds and give things away to the needy. But down here in Latin America, where you see poverty everywhere, gringos and expats are always going overboard on the giveaways. A lot of times, you know, it's guilt for feeling you have way too much. I've heard people say that. However, the vast majority of do-gooders come down for 2 weeks and go back home, basking for a while in that humanitarian do-gooder glow. You know the feeling. However, if you stay down for a while, you'll see you're not doing anyone any favors by repeatedly giving away free stuff. Sure, when there's a calamity or a disaster, it's good to help. But if you keep coming back and giving more, that hand will be out all the time. You know, living in Latin America for over 27 years now, I can't believe it. And not actually having been back in the States since about 1999, I went for 2 weeks to pick up some special rock and roll band equipment, by the way. That was before 9/11 and those airport TSA multiple cavity probes. And that's just for starters. Every multiple letter agency perpetrates its own special kind of abuse on the public. And they have to take it. They have to suck it up. There's no recourse. I can see why so many first world people are in a permanent funk. And why they're on so many prescription psychotropic drugs. It's a vicious circle. You know, 5 at 50. Meanwhile, down here in Latin America, every morning I wake up, I've got something to look forward to. Endless possibilities, opportunities, and get this, real freedom. Of course, up in the States and Europe, most people under 40 wouldn't understand what I'm talking about now. Because if you came of age after 9/11, you really are living in a sort of Orwellian dystopia. But it's not just Europe and the United States that are heading for a big train wreck. The big reset button's going to be pushed in a lot of different first world and third world countries. Which is why so many people are waking up to the idea of having a plan B, an insurance policy, an escape plan. Which is why I have people listening to the show from all over the world, including, get this, the Vatican. Yes, I've had emails from people in the Vatican. Even though I continuously pick on the Pope, you know, in Spanish, the Papa, which also means the potato in Spanish. No lie, look it up. By the way, did you know that the Catholic Church and McDonald's are always in the top two or three of the biggest landowners in the world? So while you've got McDonald's serving about 170 million hamburgers a month, the Vatican has 170 million acres of land. As Jack Palance would say, believe it or not, I know, you might say we're talking apples and oranges here, but I say we're talking apples and potatoes. The real question for the ages is, who makes the better burger, McDonald's or the Vatican Kitchen? I suppose we'll never know. For sure, I'll never know. I don't eat fast food. So anyway, I get emails from listeners from all over the world. Got one the other day from, guess where? Monaco. Speaking of tiny, extremely rich countries, just got this email. Comes from an avid listener from the Sultanate of Oman. You heard that, right? The Sultanate of Oman. Hola, Johnny. Love your show and have been tuning in a few months now. And guess what? I'm an Omani, listening all the way from Oman. Thank you for your, quote, awesome insights and tidbits. He might be from Oman, but he's tuned in. He hit me with the A word there. Did you hear it? He goes on to say, you have some very insightful things to say indeed. Please keep up the excellent work. Just a couple of questions, though. Was listening to your podcast dated 7/28/2017, where you gave a lowdown between those internation country rankings and your insights on them. Would you please make a podcast or a reference about your list of the best medium to large cities in Latin America to live in for 30-something people? I realize you prefer to be off the gringo tourist trail and thus hate the big cities, but some of us prefer the hustle and bustle of big cities, you know. Then, number two, he says, Johnny, ever considered categorizing your podcast by subject matter tags? Would make things a lot easier for your listeners to search topics of interest to them. Then he says, don't get me wrong, I love your multifaceted episodes where you go off topic, talk about many things, etc. But there's just so much great info on your podcast, it needs to be archived and sorted. Then he says, the sooner my plans to move to South America are realized, probably in about 3 or 4 years, I'll definitely visit and attend your seminar. Then he signs off and says, thanks again, Johnny. Sali from Oman. Now, I got to say, if he didn't tell me he was from Oman and didn't have a very Arabic-sounding name, Oman, I'd have taken him for a very well-educated gringo guy. And here's the story on that. He says, Johnny, I was an exchange student in California during my sophomore year in high school. I spent a couple of years studying at the university in the United Kingdom, too. But I would say my gringo-educated English is really thanks to my parents, immediate culture, and get this, watching endless episodes of The Simpsons when I was a kid. Well, I guess it's a small world after all, huh? Did I say episodes? In fact, you know, a long, long time ago, I used to think a Latino or Latina, for example, could master English 100% all right as a second language, but never master the accent. Never completely, anyway. Well, I have to say, after meeting so many Latinos and Latinas who do speak some English, and being kind of the nosy observer that I am, I have to say that's true in 99.999% of cases. It really seems like Mission Impossible, even in the reverse case, when one of us learns almost perfect Spanish, we never can get rid of that gringo accent. So even if we have perfect Spanish and we're talking over the phone to a Latino, they can tell we're gringos. Just like if a Latino was speaking perfect English over the phone, we can tell they're Latinos. Speaking of Mission Impossible, now I know we've all seen those spy movies where a person is multilingual and seems to be able to switch back and forth between many languages, and apparently not having any accent at all. I mean, that's the spy business, right? If you had an accent, even the slightest trace of one, you'd get the poison pill or the knife in the back. That's how the usual suspects get bumped off in spy movies, right? So in the real world, no matter how proficient you are at languages, it's almost impossible for you to kick the accent. So then every time we watch a spy movie, we have to suspend disbelief for a moment, thinking that when a spy is switching between languages, he's got no accent at all. Now, here's where it gets confusing. I personally met 3 or 4 Latinos who've never been to the U.S. at all, and they have perfect English without an accent, or at least an accent that's hard to place, kind of nondescript. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Probably those guys that Johnny's talking about were not only pretty good mimics, but they most certainly went to one of those expensive helicopter schools where a third to a half of their teachers are gringos from the States who speak perfect English. Which really does help and can get you 95 to 98% of the way there. But still, since kids who go to those schools are only speaking English at school, when they get back home, they're always speaking Spanish to their parents and friends. So in the vast majority of cases, they never truly iron out that accent. And that very, very small minority, 1 in 1,000 that have, they did it the way Sali said he did it in his email. They got it from US-based TV programs, mostly cartoons, believe it or not. like The Simpsons, South Park, even Beavis and Butthead and the Flintstones. Which begs the question, what about us gringos and expats when we learn Spanish, and even the ones like me living down here 27 years? Well, the fact is, as for me, and I'm kind of a language dunce, I've had quite a few Latinos and Latinas tell me, people who I speak exclusively Spanish with, that they can't place my accent at all. They knew I was from the first world, but they couldn't place what country I came from. So I guess with all the traveling I've done, I must be jumbling up my accents pretty good. But even after 27 plus years, I'll never get rid of my gringo or first world accent. So unfortunately, or fortunately, I'll never qualify as a spy, and neither will you. And funny enough, even Latinos and Latinas who've lived up in the States for many, many years, it's the same thing. Their English might be 90 or 95% perfect, but they've always got a Hispanic accent. Unless, of course, they were born up in the States or very young kids when they attended first world schools. But even so, up in the States, if you're Hispanic, you'll be living in a Spanish neighborhood. You'll be speaking Spanish at home with mom, dad, and grandma and grandpa, and English at school and class and with your buddies. So your English will be 100% and you won't have an accent. But when you come back down to Latin America to visit the homeland or you get deported, whatever, your friends and relatives here in Latin America will detect when they're speaking Spanish with you yet another kind of mishmash of an accent. Confused yet? Well, here's an example. Suppose you're a Colombian living in Texas. You were born there, but your parents are from Colombia. Well, they'll be speaking to you and each other in Spanish with a Colombian accent. However, there's a 100% chance your neighbors and relatives will be Latinos too, because Latins tend to gather in Latino barrios up in the States, you know that. And the other Latin families and kids in the neighborhood, when they speak Spanish, will be speaking their dialect of Spanish, whether it's from El Salvador, Honduras, Bolivia, Nicaragua, and of course, Mexico. In fact, overwhelmingly Mexico, because the vast majority of Latinos up in the States are of Mexican origin. Thus, almost every first-generation Latino up in the States is picking up his own parents' accent from the home country, plus accents from the other kids in the neighborhood, especially, overwhelmingly, Mexican. Then, if this Colombian kid, after he grew up a bit, went back down to the home country of Colombia to visit his relatives, when he arrives, everyone's going to notice he's got kind of a strange accent. Not Colombian, not Mexican, but a mix of those and a lot of other Latin accents. Because, you know, just like up in the States and Canada, we have regional accents. Same thing with all 20 Latin countries. Each one has a regional accent, and the bigger countries like Brazil and Argentina have more than one. But where were we? Oh, yeah. Answering Sally's email questions. Well, let me answer his second question first, talking about trying to catalog all the topics and keywords of all my, what is it now, 698 shows. Man, you know, Sally, I've been trying to get that done for years now, and guess what? It's finished! One very dedicated, tireless listener put together some keywords and phrases on every single one of my shows from the beginning. And Wayne, thanks a million for that. So hold on to your hats for a while. There'll be some big announcements to come on that front, so hang on. Now about Sally's first question. Remember, he wanted to know if you're a city boy or girl and just love the hustle and bustle of it all. What are some of my best picks for Latin American medium and large-sized cities? Well, let me just say, number one, pick a medium or large-sized city in the Altiplano or you'll sweat your ass off. That limits you to maybe 15 or 20 nice-sized cities. So we're talking about 3 or 4 big cities in Colombia, all of them over 1 million people, a few cities in Peru and Ecuador, Guatemala City, and a few cities in Mexico. So right off the bat, you're looking at a city that's higher than 4,000 feet in elevation. Believe me, if you live in the Altiplano, you'll never regret it. Plus, you'll save a lot of dough. In most cases, that means no heating or air conditioning bills. I wonder if you even know what that's like and what a great feeling it is when you get your electric bill. Then again, if you're one of those sleep all day, night owl persons, it doesn't matter if you're living in the Altiplano or not. Because even in the hottest of Latin American cities, well, at night, you'll experience that nice, kind of balmy, tropical weather. But during the day, whoa, you're going to sweat or fry unless you're in the air conditioning all the time. Now, it's true. All medium and large-sized Latin cities have some very nice upscale districts, lots of great restaurants, hotels, sightseeing, and many great things to do. And if you like big city hustle bustle, man, there's plenty of that to go around. The problem is, you know, you have to look a little bit ahead. Sure, it's nice to live in the moment, especially when you're in your mid-30s and you still think you're pretty much invincible. There's going to be a worldwide reset coming, you know. And I'd say most above average, astute people feel it, whether they want to admit it or not. Which is why I caution you against living in a big city, whether in Latin America or the first world. You have to have a plan B and a way to bug out. Which is why, as far as Latin America is concerned, I think the ideal location is to live about a half an hour to 45 minutes outside the city limits of a medium or large-sized Latin city. Because, as mentioned in previous programs, when chaos strikes and things get out of hand and the bad boys start coming out, well, most all of them don't have cars. They ride the chicken bus. Unlike up in the first world, where all the bad guys have cars and a tank of gas will get them a couple hundred miles, right to your little sanctuary or bug-out place. In other words, up in the States, when the feces hits the ventilator, you're really not safe anywhere. But as for living in the hustle-bustle of a big or medium-sized Latin city, by all means do it, especially if you're 30 or 40-something and that's your style. But my advice, do have that little getaway, homestead, beach house, whatever, half hour to 45 minutes away from the big city. That'd be your plan C, if you will. But first, let's put together our plan B. And to get that going on the fast track, the best way of all is to come down to my January 2018 Expat Insider Seminar. Again, it'll be in and around Guatemala, Central America, around 80 to 90% way off the Gringo tourist trail. You can check out the info and the itinerary by going to www.thenewexpat.com. And right now, the early bird discounts are in effect. And by the way, if you're looking to apply for residency in Guatemala, you'll be able to kill two birds with one stone by coming down to the seminar and starting that process at the same time. But to do that, you'll have to sign up at least a month before the seminar because you'll need that month to get the paperwork you're going to need. Oh, and if you want to find out the step-by-step process and how to get your residency in Guatemala, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you my very own detailed step-by-step process and how to go about it. And once again, the John Galt girls will be offering those famous John Galt pre- and post-seminar tours. If you're coming to the seminar, you really should add an extra 3 or 4 days in front or in back of the trip, or both. Talk about getting boots on the ground. There's no better way to get a really good handle on Latin America than to come down to the seminar and take a John Galt trip. And if you just can't make it down to the seminar or get boots on the ground, you really have to take my Expat Essentials course. Just go to expatplanb.com and check out my free introductory video. By the way, with whatever stage you're in with your Plan B, you really should download my free phone consultation form. Go ahead and read my questions and comments. You'll get some good ideas for sure. You can also get that at the newexpat.com website, so check it out.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.